some algae have affinity to all kinds of contaminants, like heavy metals. So they accumulate heavy metals from the environment and keep it in their body, sometimes 60x more from the cut from the relative to the environment they live in. So they're becoming like contamination bombs, okay? So it's not only that they magnify the contamination. So to your point, yes, even if the contamination is mild, in the algae, it can be horrific. So 100% using pristine water in a closed system that you know everything that's coming in, what's coming out, and you make sure it's clean and nice, huge comfort zone.
Welcome to Care More, Be Better, a podcast for people like you who care about the social impact of conscious companies and everyday heroes. Hear inspiring stories from those who put people and planet before profit and personal gain. You'll learn how you can make a difference, vote with your dollars, and get involved today. Here's your host, Karina Balizzi.
Hello, fellow do-gooders and friends. I'm your host, Karina Balizzi. Today, in a continuation from last week's theme, where we discussed climate optimism from the perspective of ongoing green projects and how we might fund them, we're going to dive into space-age technologies that can help us nourish populations for generations to come, all while using 99% less land and water resources than other food sources. This may sound unbelievable, but the reality is this technology exists today, and nutrition products are already available as a result of this tech here in the United States, in Iceland, in Israel, and in other markets around the globe, with more coming soon. To delve into this somewhat complicated discussion, I'm joined by my friend and colleague, Professor Isaac Berzin. He has been named one of the 100 most influential people by Time Magazine for his work in sustainability and climate change. Isaac is an affiliated scientist at MIT, where he worked on a NASA-sponsored project developing bioreactors for the International Space Station. His innovative work in green fuel technologies has won numerous awards, including the Frost and Sullivan Award, the Platt Global Energy Award, and American Society of Competitiveness over three consecutive years. Isaac holds a PhD in chemical engineering and biotechnology from Ben-Gurion University in Negev, Israel. And when I first met Isaac back in 2016, his reputation preceded him. I was told I was about to meet a rock star from the world of algae and technology. He has lived up to that reputation time and again every day that I've known him. I'm thrilled to collaborate with him, to work with him, and also to introduce you to him today. Isaac Berzin, welcome to the show.
Pleasure to be here, Karina.
Well, I first want to talk about what led you to be so fascinated with algae to the point where you might even be called a rock star in this space.
Yeah, I'll tell you the honest truth. First was the looks of them, because when you look at the algae culture, it's microalgae. Yeah, you see kind of colored water. It could be green or other colors. But when you look through a microscope and you see all the shapes and colors, and some of them have a little mustache called flagella. They swim around and you discover a whole world of visuals. And then you think about the critical role that they played in establishing life or enabling life on this planet. It's pretty amazing, actually. And then you think about their values in terms of nutrition and climate. For me, it became one of the most fascinating things. And I have to tell you, I've known algae from my years at MIT. So over 20 years, we have this kind of relationship. And I appreciate them more and more as time goes by. I think they're amazing little creatures, and I think we owe them a lot.
There are so many projects underway in the space of algae, microalgae, macroalgae. I've heard about things like brown seaweed grown to feed cattle to reduce their burping and the emissions that they create naturally through digesting the food they eat in their multiple chamber stomachs. But there's also big innovators like Cyanotech in Hawaii, who grows spirulina, for example, in open ponds. Or you might have heard of other projects that even you've been involved in, growing algae in open ponds. So I'd like for you to talk about what is so different about Vaxa and what you're doing in Iceland and how it really is developing this kind of cutting edge technology so that we can commercialize something that uses so little resources and gives back so much.
It's a great question, Corina. And I think that if you look at what is mostly done in the world, it's microalgae are an existing market, and it's mostly cultivated in large open systems. And I tried to explain the difference about what we do. And again, I learned the hard way. I wish I could tell you that it came to me. It's been a long road, but I'll tell you what the bottom line is. There are significant benefits to you as a user and significant benefits to the environment. And they go hand in hand. I will explain. So, for example, the user experience. I'm talking about the sensory experience. Many microalgae and macroalgae, and between us girls, I can say they're kind of disgusting experience, right? They have a very unique smell and taste, and it's not a pleasure, I would say. And a lot of it is a result of the cultivation conditions. I'll give you an example. Spirulina is around 70% protein. So you can think about it as like something like meat or fish, right? So it's a protein-rich thing. And it's grown in warm places, in warm seasons. And when you harvest the spirulina and it's kept in warm temperature for a while, it kind of stinks like meat or fish, the same thing. Okay, so sometimes it's the way you cultivate it, it creates this user experience, okay? The second thing I think, which is true for all the natural materials, is inconsistent composition, okay? On a seasonal basis, on a daily basis, again, especially microalgae where you harvest every day. Every day, the algae is different because today is sunny, today is cloudy, it's cold, it's hot, every day is different. And they react, they change their composition. So it's very hard to claim anything or establish any baseline when your input in terms of nutritional values all over the place. And the third thing is, and that's something that we learned, I would say, by doing, when you control growth conditions, it's not only they perform more of what you want them to perform. Sometimes they prefer things that are really suppressed. So growth conditions sometimes unleash metabolic pathways to really show the beauty of algae, and they create amazing things for you. And we'll give you some examples later about MBSB, but they can create significant nutritional difference compared to algae that were grown in open systems. And maybe the other dimension, the last dimension in the about you, why would you want to do this, is biosecurity. And spirulina, for example, is an extremophile. They grow in very high pH. So you might think, okay, very high pH, nothing else will grow there. Well, some other members of the blue-green algae can grow in this crazy pH levels, and some of them are neurotoxic. And you can never, look in my eyes and tell me that you're 100% sure that there are no invasive algae because it's an open system. You never know. So biosecurity is something that I feel very comfortable when you control everything and it's a closed system and you treat and filter and make sure all the inputs are pure. That kind of summarizes what's good for you, why it's good for the environment. People think that open pond system is a sustainable way of cultivation, and I want to claim that it's not. And the reason it's not is simple. Water evaporation. If you look at the numbers of water evaporation from ponds, and usually algae are cultivated in warm places, it's about 2 meters a year. So if you have a pond with a water height of 2 meters, by the end of the year, it's going to be completely dry, which means that you're growing, it's the worst camel in the world. It drinks all this water, and all this water is a loss. And in places like California, people understand what fresh water shortage is. It's immoral to grow, to cultivate microalgae in these spaces. And if you say, okay, let's do marine, brackish water. Yes, you put brackish water in the pond, but what evaporates is fresh water. The salt stays. So in order to maintain consistent salinity, guess what you need to put inside? Fresh water. So this is almost like an environmental sin to me. So I think that's kind of summarized why. Why you want to do this? Because it's much better for you, much better for the environment.
There's something that you haven't brought up in that story too, though. There is a problem of pesticides, because when you're working in an open system, I recall from days of working with open ponds, infestations with water border beetles and things like that, who want to eat all the beautiful green algae and things like that.
Including dead birds that they kind of find themselves and all kinds of dogs. Unlike a dead bird in a tomato plantation, this one is a dead bird in your culture, right? So it's kind of on the growth side of things. So I totally agree with you. The fact that you grow it in a closed system with pristine water allows you to use zero pesticides, zero herbicides, It's really an amazing thing. So I totally agree with you, Corinna. You're absolutely right.
Well, right on. One of the topics that we've recently covered on this show covers things like glyphosate or other really toxic chemicals that end up in our water tables. Now, I'm not saying that that's what's used in algae growing in open ponds, but I would also wonder if you had infiltration into the water table of something like glyphosate, if it's also finding its way into the algae. We know that people have more and more dietary sensitivities. We're only beginning to really understand what glyphosate has done to our ecosystems and what it continues to do to our microbiomes, because it's both an antibiotic and a pest control solution, right? So as it presently stands, if you are going to a closed system, then you don't have to worry about the potential for contamination with some of these really toxic chemicals. And you also then don't have to worry about procuring the same sorts of ingredients from other sources that could be more expensive from a carbon perspective, just as one example, correct?
Correct. And even to add to what you just said, some algae have affinity to all kinds of contaminants, like heavy metals. So they accumulate heavy metals from the environment and keep it in their body, sometimes 60x more from the relative to the environment they live in. So they're becoming like contamination bombs, okay? So it's not only that they magnify the contamination. So to your point, yes, even if the contamination is mild, in the algae, it can be horrific. So 100% using pristine water in a closed system that you know everything that's coming in, what's coming out, and you make sure it's clean, a nice, huge comfort zone. I totally agree with you, especially in algae.
Well, and for the audience here, I've worked for over 25 years now in the natural products industry, working to formulate supplements and bring things to market. One of the things that has been a consistent problem is something like spirulina, especially when it comes to lead levels. And so often you will see supplements that have spirulina bear the California Prop 65 warning, which will state that this product contains levels of heavy metals known in the state of California to cause birth defects and cancer, as just an example of something terrible that you would have to put on the package. Now, even if you might get more lead if you consumed wild salmon that particular day, or even a pancake made with some less than savory wheat, you would find that you're just accumulating levels of these toxic things that you really don't want. And so ultimately, if we're able to create something that doesn't have to have that kind of an environmental impact, that doesn't have to provide a negative input into our biosphere, then we'll be more healthy. And I think that should be in all of our interests.
And sometimes it's nothing that the algae farmer can control. If it's coming with the rain and it's brought into his open ponds, I mean, it's just something that he cannot do a better job. So we're not speaking little of these people. They can do the best job they can, but still, it's out of their control. And as we said, algae accumulate, they have affinity to these things, and then these are the results. Yeah, absolutely.
Similar problems even exist in things like tea. You know, you might get more levels of lead in a green tea than you really want because it ends up in groundwater and that gets sucked up through the roots, and that's just the way it is.
I've seen data on seaweed cultivated in Asia. Some of them are things that you really don't want to eat. Again, they're accumulating all kind of toxic elements from the water they're growing.
So I know that you've been bringing up of late this topic of oxalates. Can you talk about that at all? What are oxalates and why should we be concerned about them ending up in our food sources?
Yeah, so I'm not an expert for food toxicity, but I know that oxalates are compounds that created a lot of attention. The nice thing about spirulina, for example, it's oxalate-free because it just doesn't have oxalate. So some things, it's not that it has it and we clean it, just it doesn't have it. I think that's one of the beauties of actually growing things close to the source, is that you don't have a lot of the things that are coming from processing, and it depends on the strain itself, okay? So in our case, we're on the list of problems, that's not there.
Right, that's fantastic. Well, as it stands too, there is so much pressure today to create new net neutral companies or carbon negative projects. How is it that this work in particular can confidently say that it is carbon negative, that the omega-3s and the spirulina that Faxa Technologies is working to produce and provide through the consumer-facing brand of Orlo Nutrition, how can we confidently say that?
The claim carbon neutral has to come only one way. It has to come from something that's called life cycle analysis. It's an engineering analysis that takes into account all of your inputs and outputs, including the energies and the carbon emission associated with building your facility and et cetera, et cetera. So cradle to grave, so to speak. And then out of this balance, you can say if the balance is positive or negative or neutral. Okay. Now, many people tend to think that if it's a photosynthetic system like a plant, of course it's carbon neutral or carbon negative because, of course, the plants are eating CO2 from the air. It's photosynthesis, of course. That's true, but that's only half of the truth. Once you need to put fertilizers in, you have to look take into account the energy associated with creating those fertilizers. Once you have to operate machinery that uses either liquid fuels or electricity, you have to take into account the CO2 emissions that are coming from the energy usage. Okay, so you have to look at everything, not on half of the things. And in our case, there was a study, a life cycle analysis done by Cambridge University, DTI, the Danish Technology Institute, and Matisse, the National Lab of Iceland, together. It's a published paper, and they looked at everything that has to do with cultivating microalgae in our facility. And one of the keys to getting this carbon neutrality result was the integration with the geothermal power plant. So in Iceland and some other places in the world, if you dig a few kilometers down, you hit the steam. In other places, we have to burn fossil fuels to create the same steam to generate electricity. That's just natural steam. So the electricity is cost-effective and also very clean. So we use a lot of energy in the facility. We have LED lights, we have pumps, we have blowers. But when you look at the carbon footprint associated with all this activity, and you look at the CO2 that was fixed by the algae to become organic, then they balance each other. And then you get even a slightly negative. No, it's funny. Negative CO2 footprint is a positive thing. So we can, with confidence, say carbon neutral production, it's even better than that.
And speaking with the CEO of Vaxa Technologies, Ohad Bashan, he shared with me that the company actually has carbon credits that can be sold. So I think that would dispel any question about whether or not we were operating from a carbon neutral capacity, just given that alone. So I'm very intrigued by the continued growth of this type of technology growing in this way. Some of the questions I've had from community about this relate to whether it is scalable and how scalable as a nutrition solution, especially as we consider something like omega-3 and wanting to replace the nutrition that we're getting from fish with this reliable source that is 3 times better absorbed even than the EPA and DHA you get from fish oil, because it retains its polar lipid structure, which makes it more bioavailable, can get right into your cells as opposed to sitting kind of on top of your stomach acids. So yes, it's more attractive, but is it scalable?
Right. So here I have to wear my engineering hat and tell you that it's a very good question, because scalability is number one killer in biotechnology. Many things you learn in small scale are not applicable in large scale and vice versa. So what we chose is kind of a Lego block method in which we have a production unit. You're welcome to visit our website and take a look. I think it's beautiful. It's pretty aesthetic. And it's kind of vertical farming of microalgae. These are machines, you can say, that hold kind of cultivation units and LED lights. And the way we scale up, we just add more of these machines. Okay, so it's just adding more of the Lego blocks to create more. So we don't change the machine, we just add more of them. And if you think about that, we call it energy to food technology, because what's coming in is clean energy. What's coming out of it is sustainable food. And we started in Iceland with a geothermal power plant. But if you think about it, there are many sources of clean energy. There are hydro energy and you have other means of clean energy. So this unit, especially because it's not connected to local conditions, sunlight or weather, could be copy-pasted to many places, not only in Iceland, around the globe, where you have access to cold water, could be ocean water, by the way, it doesn't have to be fresh water, and clean energy. Okay, so the rollout potential is significant. I don't think there's one of the things that are places of concern. Can you scale it up? I don't think there's a problem.
Yeah, fantastic. And in the time I've known and worked with the company, what I have seen is that even the facility in Iceland has, it looks like, tripled in size. Is that about the rough estimate in the last 3 years?
Even more than that. And we have a very conservative CEO that only grows when there's a customer for it. It doesn't build things without a guaranteed market. So yes, the answer is yes. And it was a significant growth. Actually, it's every time I come, it's amazing. And I've just been here like last month. So yeah.
Well, I think the plan is for me to come this late spring or summer. So I will get to see Vaxa Technologies in person. I'll get to spend time with you and the team there for the first time since our collaboration began. And we worked to bring these really fantastic ingredients to consumers with Orlo Nutrition. Now, I understand because of the growth that we've experienced, we're able to lean in now to what we're doing in spirulina. And I'd really love for you to talk about what makes this spirulina so different and unique compared to the stuff that is grown in open ponds, even if they are in a semi-controlled environment. I've seen some that look like they have greenhouses above them and things like that to keep out some environmental contaminants.
Yeah, so I would start maybe with the user experience. It's just unbelievable that this thing has no taste and smell. If you ever tried spirulina, you're never gonna forget, right? And in this case, it's just unbelievable. There's expectations for this specific taste. You just don't feel it. And one of the versions of the products we have, it's completely blue. So your mind goes crazy. You know, blue foods, they don't exist in nature, right? So you're eating, say, like a blue yogurt and your mind is looking for the extra taste, but there is no.
Well, and I can attest to that because I got some of the early 7% solution that was, I think, experimental. And I mixed it in with my child's frosting, just as a for example, to put on a brownie or something like that, just to make it blue and more interesting, or mix it in yogurt or even in milk, just to show them the color change and just seeing it kind of go in almost like you would with a food colorant. It's that vibrant. And I mean, they're children, they're 6 and 9, so they like it.
Yeah. So, and again, it could be as exotic as you want or non-exotic. For example, we have customers that are bread manufacturers. And people do not appreciate green dots in their bread. So we have a brown version. We just pasteurize it in conditions that make it brown. And people cannot believe that's a spirulina bread because there's no color, no smell, no taste, but you can have tangible nutritional values, which I'll explain in a minute. So you can be as exotic or as benign as you want. So it's absolutely. The second thing is consistent composition, and which brings me to talk about the benefits of controlled growth environment. Okay, so when we started this, and Corinna, I wish I could tell you we're very smart. It was a bit of, we're chasing something else. So we have a contract with a natural food manufacturer to manufacture food and blue food colorant. And we're optimizing the system to enhance the production of that pigment, which is called phycocyanin. All of a sudden, we started to see that the ratio between the pseudo vitamin B12, which is typical for spirulina, which most spirulina have, in abundance, and it's not biologically active, to the active part, which again, usually it's a small fraction, less than 10% of the spirulina, this ratio started to change dramatically to reach a point in which more than 95% of your vitamin B12 is in the active form, and only a small minority is in the pseudo form. So all of a sudden, spirulina, and the way to do it is that you have to measure both. It's kind of the net active B12 form, right? You take the active minus the pseudo, and that's your net active. That's what's biologically, because they compete for the same receptor. All of a sudden, this became like a crazy vehicle for active vitamin B12. And the beauty here that we can consistently having year-round, every day, the same amount, which opens the door to a very interesting value proposition, which is nutritional and functional claims. Apparently, B12 is on the list of approved FDA and EFSA, a list of vitamins and minerals, that if you can show on a product that you have more than 20%, you can claim that's a source of, you know, that vitamin or mineral. And then in the case of B12, they're allowed functional claims. One of them is that B12 supports a healthy immune system, for example, which is, oh my God, I want a healthy immune system, right? So it kind of borders from like nutrition to almost like health or benefits or function. So it's amazing, okay?
Yeah, I want to translate a couple things for our audience here, just because I've spent so long in this nutrition field. So when you say pseudo versus active vitamin B12. A pseudo vitamin B12 is essentially going to sit on that receptor site and block the absorption of the active vitamin B12. The most active vitamin B12 that you typically see in a supplement is called methylcobalamin, and that's the form that our spirulina is actually delivering. So it just gets right into your system. Often people take vitamin B12 for things like energy because it supports your body's natural ability to produce mitochondrial ATP energy. So you'll feel more spring in your step. Many people use vitamin B12 after they've had a late night of drinking or something of that effect to help them recover the day after. And while this podcast is not for anything but informational purposes, I will say we're not mentioning anything out of league here. Another thing that you mentioned is phycocyanin. So phycocyanin, which is present in the spirulina, is a very potent antioxidant. I mean, it's blue. It's not present in many things and definitely not in that high of a potency.
So I'll tell you a little secret. You want to hear something amazing? Visually amazing. So phycocyanin is actually has a tendency to react different to light. So it's kind of chromatic. So if you, for example, have a glass of water and you add phycocyanin in it, it becomes blue. So if you take your phone and open the light, the flashlight, and you put the light in front of the glass, it's going to look purple. Then you're going to move it to the back and it's going to look blue. And it's going to change the colors on you. It's just unbelievable.
See, I thought that was because of a pH change. Like there's some teas that you can buy even where if you put like a drop of lemon juice in it, suddenly it goes from blue to pink.
Right. That's a pH. But it's the same thing. It's just the moving of the light relative to your eyes changes the colors and it's mesmerizing.
You sent a video like that. I thought it was like a lava lamp. It was so crazy.
Unbelievable, right? And it's just because we have light underneath the bottle. Again, to answer your question, how is it different from other spirulina? So it does carry a nutritional claims, which no other spirulina in the world has, especially when the composition changes on a seasonal basis.
And that's been a problem for natural products in general. You have seasonality shifts in their composition. So if you're doing something like trying to get a vitamin C from amla, which is a gooseberry grown in India, right? It's an Indian gooseberry. You'll have some seasons when the vitamin C levels are higher and some when they're lower. And then suddenly companies that manufacture products with them can't meet label claims. So it becomes incredibly challenging to formulate with them.
Exactly. Especially if you think using spirulina as an ingredient in the food industry. No, a claim on a food product is a legal obligation. If I'm telling you this food is a source of B12 and oh my God, it's not, I'm going to be liable for it. So I think now it's opening the door to even think about spirulina as an ingredient. It's a claim enabling ingredient. By the way, so we have a bread, as I mentioned, we have a bread maker in Iceland that is using our spirulina and he has two certificates. One comes from the National Food Lab of Iceland. They analyze the bread. It has about 50% of the daily value of B12 per serving. Okay, so it's a source of B12, active, net active, because they measured both. And they have also another certificate. This bread is carbon neutral. Again, because of the negative carbon emission reduction coming from the ingredient.
Well, and I'm betting people don't believe that you can't taste the spirulina. But what I'm telling you is if I can't taste the spirulina that's in the milk or in the frosting or on my finger, that's, you know, like literally just trying it that way, then I'm betting I'm not going to be able to taste it in the bread.
No, I'm telling you, the mind is looking for it because you know it's a spirulina bread or you see, you know, the algae itself is green or you're looking for it. You're looking for the smell or the taste. You just can't find it. It's very confusing. I've seen this look on people's face. It's just amazing. So yeah, I think it's a very different product, a different user experience, different environmental footprint and different nutritional value. So altogether, the name is the same, spirulina, but it's a totally different thing.
Wow. Well, I know a lot of this is pre-market, but we're working together in collaboration to bring some of this to the United States in spring and early summer. Can't give too much away right now. We have our first product in the Icelandic ultra spirulina space presently available. It is called Immunity Boost. It does provide some natural methylcobalamin along with vitamin D3 from a vegetarian source. The next batch is going to be vegan fully. And then also a smattering of B vitamins to give kind of a full spectrum of those Bs. The flavor that it does have is from the B vitamins, really. And I think it's just stabilized with sorbitol. You squirt it in the mouth and it's bright blue. But because I know that the spirulina doesn't taste at all and I get a hint of the B vitamins, I'm like, okay, what I'm tasting is the B vitamins in this.
Not to make sure we give it a holistic solution, not half a solution. So we made sure it's...
Yeah. And I know the dosage for this is relatively low, like 2 sprays twice a day, I think is 1,000 IU of vitamin D3. You took part in the research that brought this forward. So why Immunity Boost? Why was that the first product with the Icelandic Ultra Spirulina?
Actually, the quest started from the COVID days. And we thought that one way to live with COVID and different mutants is just to make sure that we have a way to strengthen our immune system. And so we looked at the things that are known to be supporting the immune system, things that you can have already FDA and EFSA approved claims. And we found a lot of them already in the like B12 that I mentioned. And we said, let's not give half a solution. Let's do the best and give a complete solution. And let's make it in a way, because the amount that you need to actually use is so little, why not having it in the spray so it can be absorbed not through the stomach? So some things are lost in translation when they go through the stomach. So it's an attempt to bring the science knows and nature can produce in the best kind of vehicle to support the immune system. That's actually how it started.
Well, I can say it's very innocuous, tastes good. It's easy to consume. My kids like it. We recently got hit in our household with influenza A. And so my 9-year-old had it pretty bad, high fever, all of that. I ended up with it. I'm still in a little bit of recovery. You might be able to hear a little bit of nasal congestion and my throat's a little off, but I really weathered it a little better than my 9-year-old did, but it may have also been his first time getting the true flu. His immune system is now bouncing back and recovering. But I have to say, some people in our community got hit and were out a lot longer than either of us. So I know it's doing something for me and I just keep taking it every day, along with, of course, my omega-3. So I'm curious to see, as we continue forward, what you would expect to see in the next 5 years. I mean, you have a view on where the technology can take us. You have a view on some things perhaps in the background in R&D that I don't necessarily see. And I understand you're going to be coming here to the States to speak at an upcoming summit. So what can you tell me about where we are today with this algae technology and what we can expect to see 5 years from now?
Yeah, I look at spirulina as a bag of nutrition, right? So I think there's a room to look at the different components and to find amazing usage for them. And I would tell you, my honest truth is, Corina, that my heart is with those people that cannot afford the nutrition. Okay, they cannot afford to pay for their... In a way, I think that we are fortunate to have this multiple revenue streams, that you can use them to support a nutrition program. The Gates Foundation has spent a lot of time to study what would be the best way to address malnutrition. And their conclusion was food fortification. So you take the traditional foods people are eating in different places in the world and just add the missing nutritional elements, mainly vitamins and minerals, to their nutrition. Again, just you mentioned now the immune spray, it's just a selected group of vitamins and minerals that does the trick. The only thing is you can afford it, they cannot afford it. So my hope and passion is to bring it to such a situation that one part of the algae will support the other. So the color and the omega-3, and the carbon credits and other products would support this, the other side of the coin. So anytime you go and you have your amazing shake in the morning and it's blue and it's vibrant, it's full of the best of the nature, some other kid in Tanzania can have his breakfast as well. And there's a room for it. I think I know how to put it all together in such a way that it's going to still be a good business. Listen, I had an inspiring boss at MIT. His name is Bob Langer, and he was the person that brought this controlled release to the world, this whole field, the scientific field of controlled release to the world. Bob is one of the richest people in Boston, and Bob saved lives of millions of people, I can tell you that. So you could do both. You could create an amazing business with a great benefit to the society, and I think we can do it with algae. I really do.
Well, you know, there's a big movement towards more plant-based eating. And one of the big challenges is getting enough protein. So when you mention how much of the biomass of spirulina is actually protein and providing all 9 essential amino acids and providing vitamin B12 and HEMA iron, all of which are typically found in beef, it looks very attractive as an alternative nutrition source that can be scalable and be available to a large swath of population who also may not want to eat cattle and who may not want to eat chicken. And these things are becoming increasingly expensive. We've seen incredible inflation, in particular in the meat aisle at grocery stores since COVID began. We see and hear stories of things like, well, there's eruptions of child labor, even in meat packing plants now in some of the Midwest states, and some flexings of state laws to allow for young teenagers to work in these meat packing plants. So there's even people from an ethical perspective who may not have been shy of eating meat before, just not wanting to partake in that system. So I can see a day when something like this becomes more viable and available in the marketplace that's not soy, not corn. We're feeding soy and corn to our fish now. So what are we doing? We're eating animals that we feed soy and corn to, and we wonder why we end up sick because all we're eating is basically concentrated soy and corn, right?
I totally agree with you, Corinne. I think we give people a choice. It's not just a choice. We're not preaching. We're not telling anyone how to live his life, but we're enabling nutritional choices. And I can tell you on a personal level, I know the price of not having. So one of my daughters, once she realized that meat is coming from a dead animal, she was 5 years old, it was in Thanksgiving, right? She saw the turkey, there's no mistake there. She refused to eat anything that was alive before. This was her expression. Was this alive before? So I understand it, okay? But what happened was a severe lack of iron, vitamin B12, hair loss, problems to concentrate, tiredness, fatigue, a long list of health issues. So you want to enable to people to make their moral choice, whatever you want to call it, right? Nutritional choice, without compromising on their health. And I think just enabling this choice, and you're absolutely right. If you look at all the foods in the world, there's nothing like beef. The closest food to beef from the nutritional point of view is Icelandic ultra spirulina. And I can say it with confidence. Again, it doesn't mean that you have to chew on algae. You can have it as an ingredient in your bread, in your ice cream, or it could be a nutritional celebration. You don't have to like chew on algae and have a green smile. But it's a choice I think we want to give people. This is your choices and you choose what you want.
Well, I like that. I love it, in fact. And that's why I'm continuing to work with you on this project for this time and really helping to help people understand what the differences truly are in source and why you have to do things the way you do in order to create responsible products. Now, I will invite people to stay tuned at Orlo Nutrition. They can visit orlonutrition.com and see some of the products that we've brought to market thus far, from the omega-3s to the Icelandic Ultra Spirulina in our Immunity Boost product. And listeners of this show qualify for an extra 10% off. So you can use the coupon code CMBB for Care More Be Better. That's CMBB at checkout and get an extra 10% off. That can mean you get as much as 25% off your order if you are subscribing to Save Today. So with that, I have one more question for you. And this has to do with what other work in microalgae and macroalgae you're seeing, perhaps performed by other companies that intrigues you today. And what we should be on the lookout for. What else is really cool in algae?
Great question. So I will not mention names, but I'll tell you the principle. I think that microalgae is kind of the untapped resource. I once read a book about root systems of plants, which is called the hidden half, because this is the half of the plant we don't see. In our case, it's like the hidden 99.9% of the algae, because out of the hundreds of thousands of microalgae strains in the world, know how many are allowed for human nutrition? Maybe a handful and a half, okay? So I think that there are treasures out there of different strains with different nutritional values. We just don't know them. We never isolated them. We never understood them. We never learned how to keep them happy. So we just lost their potential. So I think companies are looking into this to unleash the potential that this whole kingdom of microalgae have. And again, it's from nutrition to drugs to cures. Okay. It's the foundation of life, right? So I think everything is there. It's like a mine that you need to go in and look for the diamonds.
Well, I love that. And I have seen some really interesting innovations from the foam in your sneaker soles to even a plastic replacement from algae so that you could have a bioplastic from some species of algae that perhaps are growing in algae blooms that then end up being captured. So there's just different innovations happening in this space. I have a lot of faith in the scientists like yourselves to figure out how we can really commercialize some of these applications to create a greener future, one in which we aren't just operating from extractive principles all the time. I really love the full circular perspective that we get from this algae, especially understanding that the world's first life forms are really microalgae. So if we're going to that original source of nutrition for omega-3s, because fish get their omega-3s from the algae they consume, if we're going to that original source for energy and for nutrients that help us create energy, then we're not having to capture yesterday's energy to create the energy we need today. So we're not having to extract oil from underground or from our seabeds in order to fuel our vehicles. We can find another way. And I'm really confident that we're going to be shifting the tide in this direction. And this is what helps me to stay optimistic in the face of bad news that we so often get with climate change. I mean, this last week, we had another atmospheric river come through my hometown in Northern California. I have had to spend a considerable amount of my cash assets on making flood abatement projects around the home work so that I don't flood in the studio I'm in right now. So we are seeing the impacts of climate change today, but with the real hard work that is being done behind the scenes at so many companies out there that are exploring algae tech, that are exploring energy technologies, I mean, I think we're going to see a new wave of innovation that may even make the electric car that we see today obsolete and get replaced with something completely new.
Well, I agree. If you think about the history, right, of humankind, once you realize we cannot, you know, grab bananas in the jungle because we're out of bananas, we found a way to cultivate them and grow them. And then we went to the desert. So we've already experienced several revolutions that were led by technology that made things different. And I think we're definitely on the edge of the next revolution. We just cannot continue this way. It's going to, we're driving to the cliff, but you have to be optimistic, as you say, that we're going to find a way to not to drive into the cliff, but to kind of build a bridge around.
Find a way to leap over the next big leap. I mean, I feel like it's coming. I'm just not sure what it is yet. I don't think, I feel like we're on the precipice of something big. And so I'm remaining optimistic, and that's a choice, I think, every day. So for all my climate activist friends who are listening today, I hope that you can get up today and make the choice to remain optimistic. I even have an entire podcast episode dedicated to the concept of climate optimism, as I interviewed Anne-Thérèse Genari, the climate optimist, on this show. So I'll encourage my audience to go back and listen to that episode, because again, we need to keep a positive outlook to keep the creative mind going so that we can stay solutions focused and create the next big change. Thank you so much for joining me today, Isaac. This has been awesome.
It's been a real pleasure. Thank you for having me.
It is always my pleasure to host a conversation with Isaac Berzin. I have had the pleasure of knowing him now since 2016, seeing his genius at work in the field of algae technologies as it relates to nutrition and health too. And I encourage everyone here to take a look at our show notes. I'll provide direct links to vaxa.life. That's the website for Vaxa Technologies and their facility in Iceland. You can even watch coverage on the BBC and perhaps even catch an article in National Geographic about this innovative facility. You can also always go to orlonutrition.com and visit the website and peruse the products that are presently available. More are definitely on the horizon and soon. With that, I just want to thank all of you for spending this time with me today. Remember that this show is an invitation to care more so that we together can create that better world. Thank you, listeners and watchers, now and always, for being a part of this pod and this community. Because together, we really can do so much more. We can care more. We can be better. and we can create the beautiful future that we want. We just need to stay optimistic along the way. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Care More, Be Better, a podcast for social good. To make sure you never miss an episode, subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen to podcasts. And share with your friends to help us reach more people and spread more social good.